Man, this week a highlight for me was, you know, finally after I'm sorry, one second, we're gonna have to start over. Hey Teddy.
Hello, and welcome to episode 2 of Props in Runes Getting Coffee with Justin Winsenberg and me, Stephen Jones. Today, we'll be joined in the second half by our friend, Dr. Ken Caster.
So what's been a highlight for you this week?
So a highlight for me this week was that finally, I think my wife and I, you know, having a newborn around the house and my 3.5-year-old had like the first chance to spend some time together last night, beyond an hour. I mean, it consisted in watching a movie. So, you know, it wasn't like it was intense time together, but it was actually quite nice. I guess I didn't realize before we had the baby how hard it was going to be here at the start to actually spend any time together, any significant time together. And I think, you know, being under quarantine is only escalated that because, you know, we don't really have anybody babysitting or watching.
Right. Yeah. It's counterintuitive, right? That spending all that time together would mean spending less time together, but that totally makes sense to me.
Yeah. It's crazy. And so it was refreshing. I mean, we consisted of watching a movie, but it was a funny movie and yet also kind of had some insights too. So it was kind of fun to watch.
Nice. Good. Let's see. A highlight for me this week. Okay. So we found this old bread maker that my mom had.
Oh, nice.
And then when my dad moved, he gave it to us and we kind of, you know, just sat on the shelf. We never really thought about using it and we've started using it and I'm having a lot of fun making bread. I made carrot bread with oatmeal in it. And that was really good. Made some like cinnamon raisin bread. I don't know. I'm having fun playing with bread.
So did it come like with a recipe book and all that?
Yeah. There's a recipe book. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, we've got one of those too, and we've been using ours more frequently as well. And it's the kind of thing where it'll sit there for a while and I'll forget about it, and we'll be like, man, we should make some fresh bread. And it's like you never regret it. I don't know why we don't do it more often.
That's all. The only thing I'm regretting is I'm like, man, I feel like I'm eating a lot. You know?
But it's fresh and it's organic, right? Well, maybe not organic technically, but
let's see. A low light for me this week. Okay, so this, I'm going to cheat. It's half highlight, half low light. So we started in one of my classes, we started doing this church planting project with micro churches at the beginning of the semester. Yeah. And it's an experiment, right? Like we're just trying to see how it'll go. And the highlight is that we've continued meeting with our group virtually. I don't think we've had everybody there, you know, since the change. That makes me think, like, are we going to talk about, as society, are we going to be like, since the change? It seems like a thing in a movie, you know, like, seriously, where you call back to since the change. You know,
like a Stephen King movie, though.
I wonder what we're going to call it. Anyway, but since then, I don't think we've had everybody there. But it has been encouraging that the group is, you know, pressing in and trying to figure out how do we be church together. And we're trying to figure out what is the point of this group. I think the discouraging thing about it is just seeing the toll that all this is taking on people, like, because we're, you know, having a little bit more intentional conversation with each other, in that micro church context, just seeing like, man, this is like, there's hardness to this. It's difficult. It's costing people things. And I think that's really, I don't know. I mean, it's good to be in it together, right? That's why it's partly a highlight, but it's also this, that's heavy.
Do you find that students are being kind of more vulnerable then about their circumstances right now than maybe they normally would in terms of just being honest about that, those kinds of things?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know, because we've never done the microchurch thing again, so I don't really know what to compare it to, but yeah.
Well, you did kind of cheat.
I did kind of cheat. Yeah, that's right. What's a low light for you?
I had a definite low light. I think it came around Friday. You know, I'm preparing for my PhD defense here in a week and a half, and I just hit a complete wall of feelings of self-doubt, feelings of just inadequacy. And I've realized for some time now over the years that I have this incredible imaginative capacity to envision the worst case scenarios. But like, I really can play these out in my mind in pretty cruel ways, you know, where not only can I envision these things happening, but they feel so real almost that it's like emotionally, it feels like they already are happening and that they are certain to happen.
So this is like You're imagining yourself just totally bombing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I can hear all the questions that I can't answer well. And I can hear, and then it's not so much just getting stumped with the question as much as it is like just criticism of everything that I've done, of all of the insufficiencies that I may have with this or with that. And then ultimately the final word, of course, is you fail, you know, so.
So it's not the kind of thing that you can take that and be like, oh, that's what I need to prep more for. It's like your entire project is invalid.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's stuff that preparation hasn't really helped with, which is what I've been doing over the last couple of weeks as I've been navigating classwork and that. And so that prep doesn't really help me get through that. So I had to kind of take a walk and clear my head a little bit. It was helpful for me. I found some stuff online of some people at some schools in London, not my school, but just kind of talking through the process, and it kind of put my mind at ease a bit. But I also realized that like very infrequently in my life have those worst case scenarios ever happened. Mm-hmm. But again, it comes back to that question from last week where we talked about trusting God and how ultimately I think it is a lack of trust and faith, but not in some sort of just straightforward way as much as it is like, I just need to trust God's in the process. And even if, you know, God forbid the worst case scenario happens, I think, you know, he's got me in the palm of his hand and it'll be okay. So.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a good segue to insight.
Oh yeah, insight, man. That's a tricky one. You know, I think in light of all of this, maybe I'll move into insight then as it relates to that. I've come to realize there's this tension in me of faith, and I wouldn't say doubt as much as my theological perspective about God sometimes leads me to believe that he won't rescue me from harm. I think we maybe talked about that last week as well. On the one hand, I think it's like theologically true that God doesn't always save us from difficult situations, or that he doesn't promise us safety in all everything we go through. But I think that can lead in a negative direction towards a sort of pessimism that God won't almost ever do that.
Yeah.
And for me, it's not really an intellectual thing. I find that to be true on sort of an emotional level with God, where it leads me then to anxiety and to fear, where it's like, I know theologically speaking, God may not save me from this, or may not. It is a real possibility I could fail my dissertation. I mean, at least in theory it is, right? It's like such a thing is an impossibility. Mm-hmm. But that could lead me to thinking then that, oh, of course, God won't ever, you know, help smooth the situation out, that's a negative thing as well. So the insight might be to have a balanced view then of understanding God doesn't always save us from harm, but understanding that he sometimes does. and even if he doesn't, like there's this sense of strong safety in him and trust in him anyways. So what's one insight that you have from this week?
So I was thinking about, you know, this question that you were thinking about, what would God deliver us from? And I found myself reading Daniel yesterday, which is kind of a strange book to read for Easter, I guess. But I don't know, it felt really appropriate in a way. I was thinking about, I read the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and of Daniel in the lion's den. And just thinking about that sometimes God does deliver his people. But the way that those guys had even ended up there was that Jerusalem had been, you know, sacked by Babylon, yeah. Right? And they'd all been carried off, you know, and of course, a lot of people would have died in that too. So the whole context of that was actually terrible suffering. And yet God was faithful in the midst of that. And so trying to think about, and I think we talked about this a little bit last week too, but this idea of, you know, the faithfulness of God is not really dependent on my particular circumstances, and trying to wrestle with that. And then thinking about Jesus too, right? And his request that God would take the cup of suffering from him. And yet the decision of saying, okay, no, the Father's will is good, even when it involves something that's sometimes terrible. And I think even, you know, yesterday there were the tornadoes, there were other things that happen, and, you know, just like, what does it mean to not trivialize suffering and also look at the goodness of God?
Yeah, man, that's a massive question. I found, for some reason, you know, my son has taken such a liking to the Daniel Lion's Den story. And I found that he'll have these moments now where he's old enough where for some reason, right around bedtime, you know, and he's settled in bed and we close the door and we leave the room and he'll say, wait, you know, I'm scared. And, you know, we don't know what he's scared of. And it's probably just that he's 3.5, but you know, I found myself kind of going to the, well, what did Daniel do? Yeah. You know, when he was scared and he knows the answer, you know, oh, he prayed to God. And I said, well, what happened? You know, and he thinks for a second, he's like, well, God helped him, you know? And so then I'm like, you know, and God can help us. And then I find myself being dissatisfied, like, with that answer myself, which is that caution again to what I said earlier of like, maybe to me that the danger is seeing the times where God doesn't deliver and then fossilizing that theologically, but then forgetting that, but God did deliver. Right. I mean, he delivered quite miraculously Daniel from the lion's den and Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. But he didn't deliver, right? But with the Jerusalem incident necessarily. Mm-hmm. And then we think of Lamentations, Psalm 137, are like those two laments are some of the most powerful laments over the suffering that the people experience. So how to balance that, man? It is such a difficulty in some ways. I don't know. I don't know how to do that myself.
Mm-hmm. We'll be right back in a moment with Dr. Ken Gaster.
Oh, you know what? Our guest is here.
Oh, nice. Hello, Ken. Are you with us?
Hey, I think I'm with you now.
Nice.
Good to see your face again. Man, I really like your office, how you've got these all those books. You know, it makes me feel like my cat in the background sitting on my bed is just insufficient for video conferencing for classes.
That's funny. So I'm excited. We have Ken Gaster with us today. Ken, we've been working together for how long? 7 years?
Yeah, something like that. Seems like an eternity.
That's funny. And Ken is a
professor of youth ministry.
Professor. So you're a full professor.
Yeah.
So so we asked Ken to come and talk with us a little bit about what it means to do ministry in quarantine or self-isolation or whatever you want to call the stage that we're in right now. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, Ken, was you have this devotional, video devotional I've seen you've been doing on Facebook. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I woke up 4 weeks ago on a Sunday morning and just decided to open up my devotional book. I have a book called Make a Difference, and it's got 365 daily devotions in it. And so I thought I'd just turn the camera on myself and read a devotion for that day. And I just kept doing it day after day. So for 28 days in a row, I just ended yesterday to take a little break. But for 28 days in a row, I just read through my devotional book. It was a great way to connect with people. I did it primarily through Facebook. And every day I had dozens and dozens and dozens of people engaging with me on that devotional. And so it was good encouraging practice for a lot of people.
That's great. When did you write the book?
Originally 2016, and then it's in its second edition. So I was using that was published last year.
I caught a little piece of one where I think it was maybe the last one that you did. You were saying, think of somebody that you can't be with right now, a friend you can't be with.
Yeah.
And I was like, did you add that? Or is that actually what was on the text for that day?
No, yeah, several of them were very relevant each day. So I wrote these a while back, but they became very relevant. So that was from Philippians chapter 1, where Paul is saying, I wish I could be with you guys right now. And he was in a different place and he couldn't get to Philippi, the city of Philippi. And he's like, I long to be with you. I wish I could be with you. So the devotional that day was think of who you would like to be with, but you can't be. And think of a nice way to reach out to them. So it became very timely because we're all quarantined. So we're sheltered in place. So we can't be with people that we want to be with. A lot of us are with our families and maybe we don't want to be. So that's it. That's a different devotional. But
well, and as much flack as some celebrities have gotten for saying that being quarantined feels like prison, I think, you know, the fact that Paul's, you know, writing from prison, you know, in that particular letter, it is relevant. You know, I want to be cautious of drawing the same kind of analogies, you know, as if like just being quarantined at home is somehow prison. But for some people whose family situations are pretty ugly, you know, I don't know. It could feel a lot like not such a good situation. And, you know, I think it's interesting how you point out this sort of longing to see the Philippians and how that sort of longing is definitely present, I think, as we're kind of separated from friends and family right now.
Yeah, and you can't just go over to see them and you can't just get together with them. It makes your longing, if you have the right attitude in Christ, it makes your longing to see those people that much sweeter. Mm-hmm. And it makes that reunion, eventually, when we are able to see one another, it makes that reunion that much sweeter as well. So I love Paul's heart in the book of Philippians in that way. So I hope to have the same heart for people. Rather than dwelling on this, woe is me, this is a horrible situation, I'm so depressed. And it's easy to follow into that when you're stuck in one place and you can't just go and see the people that you care about. It's easy to fall into that trap. But rather than having that, we think of what is true, what is right, what is noble, what is praiseworthy, which is also a message in Philippians. And we start loving and longing those people that the Lord has put in our path. And so, yeah, the challenge for that day, every day these devotionals have a action to take. And so the challenge for that day to make a difference was to reach out to people in a unique way. So who do you need to reach out to? So I reached out to my family a little bit that I can't be with and I miss. I reached out to a friend who's going through a really huge difficulty, a very stressful situation, and reached out to a couple others that maybe I wouldn't have otherwise.
I appreciate that early on in all this, you know, a month ago, you realized there was an opportunity to serve people in that way through the devotional. It's cool that you jumped on that and that now you already have a month of that all put together.
Yeah, it's great. And I'm thinking of it also from a youth ministry perspective. There are youth groups. There are churches that can't meet right together in person, but there are youth groups all over the nation that can't meet. And a lot of these students, these teenagers, they've lost their entire social structure right now, except for their online social structure. But they've lost their entire in-person social structure. And you think about how important that social outlet is when you're a teenager. Do you remember those days? I know that was a long time ago, but
and for youth groups.
Yeah.
I mean, I know for me, man, when I was, you know, a senior, junior in high school, like youth group was a lot of my life. I mean, I spent a lot of time with folks in our youth group. And so not being able to see those people would have been really hard.
Yeah. So it's for them, if they can be challenged to do something to reach out to their friends in a creative way or to stay connected, that's really important. So rather than just becoming stuck on Netflix binging all day long.
I suppose in that way you also are modeling something for youth pastors, right?
I hope so. Mm-hmm. And that youth pastors are among the most creative ministry people in the world. I heard a story yesterday about a local youth leader with Young Life who went to her students' houses. And before everybody freaks out, she didn't go in and interact with everybody. She stayed outside. And this last week, actually, she stayed outside and brought some, I don't know what she wrote with, but like wax chalk or something on their windows. And she played tic-tac-toe with the students through the windows just to make, you know, some in-person connection with those students. And they were able to talk through the windows.
That's really cool.
That's really creative. So I love how creative the church can get during a time like this.
I kind of wonder, you know, when the dust settles, or if the dust settles on all of this, do you think there's anything that youth pastors are doing right now that will be implemented, you know, after the fact? In other words, like, are there things that we're learning now about youth ministry that are actually beneficial and in techniques and, you know, methods that are beneficial that will be implemented later, but it was something that maybe arose specifically out of having to respond to these kinds of circumstances.
Yeah, I think it's number one, it's calling into question a lot of our inherited programming, where we think that ministry is like it's always been on Wednesday night and maybe Sunday morning.
Yeah.
You know, or it's that ministry has always been the vacation Bible school that suddenly churches are starting to cancel in May and June. And the reality is that none of those things are necessarily biblical. There is a biblical idea that we shouldn't give up meeting together. There's a biblical idea about the church gathering together for worship and teaching and for ministry to those who are in need. So as long as we fit into those sort of parameters, we can do whatever we want. And so I think it is maybe upending our concept of, oh, this is my job. My job is to run this program. And maybe the job isn't so much to run a program as it is to do ministry. so I hope that there will be some lasting change. I think I'm somewhat of a pragmatist saying that I think we're going to fall back into our same rhythms when the shelter in place is lifted.
Maybe even aggressively, right?
Maybe even aggressively, like to, yeah, seize back what we've lost. But if we do, I do hope that we will cherish what we're actually gaining back, which is that gathering together, and we'll also maybe have developed some new habits of reaching out to people.
If you could see one, you know, one change come out of this whole time with the shelter in place, what would you want that to be? If there's one thing that stuck?
Well, let me take it from a personal perspective. I hope that people have realized what their tendencies are and that it's caused them to need Jesus. I think this has scared a lot of people, and they've realized how fragile they are as people and how their constructs, I'm trying to use a Stephen Jones word there, how their constructs were holding them together. And when their construct is taken away, they realize that they, wow, I don't even have a foundation here. And I'm praying that people will seek Jesus. That's been one of the cool things about that daily devotional. For a lot of people, it gave, as they responded to me and interacted with me, it gave them a reminder that every day really was about their relationship with Jesus first, and everything gets built on top of that. So if there's one change during this time, I hope, I pray that it's that people will find their foundation in Jesus and then build their programming and their structure for life and what they do and how they do it, that they'll build that on that foundation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've kind of wondered how being away from Crown has impacted a lot of students and faculty alike. You know, speaking of constructs, you know, we get settled into a place like Crown, which is both an academic environment, but also, you know, Christian higher ed. And so, you know, we have our own patterns of spiritual disciplines, if we want to call them that, right? Mm-hmm. We have our own, at Crown, you know, we have our own patterns of how what we're doing at Crown engages our spiritual lives. And so I've noticed being away from those patterns, and the similar thing happens in the summers, I think, for me. But right now, you know, I notice how being away from those patterns can be challenging. And I'm sure students are feeling that as well. Like, I don't know what you've been at Crown now 7 years, you know, do you notice that at all?
How long
have you been there? 10? Longer?
10.
That's right. Wow. 10.
A decade.
So, I mean, what do you think about that? Because I have this sobering thought every once in a while of like, if I weren't teaching New Testament and didn't have even a sense of discipline of having to engage the text and having to, I don't know, have this sense of accountability through the teaching role, what would my Christian life look like? I don't know the answer. I hope it's a real positive answer, you know, but do you find that being displaced away from Crown has caused challenges for yourself in terms of those kinds of things, those kinds of patterns? Do you find that to be the case in the summers when you go home?
Yeah, Justin, great. That's a great question. I'm seeing personally this as a wonderful time because I live about 40 minutes away from the school.
Yeah.
So I've gained an hour and 20 minutes of driving time. So I've pushed that into a wonderful opportunity to read my Bible freshly and to not be reading. I like that what you're saying is, and it's a true temptation, I think, for those who are in Christian ministry. There's a temptation to read the Bible because you're going to be teaching about it, right?
Yeah.
Or even to live Christianly because you're going to be around Christians.
So I better be a good example, right? And so I've actually had a remarkable time. I opened up a book I wouldn't normally spend time in, the First Chronicles, and I'm in Second Chronicles now. And I've just been going piece by piece with commentaries open, just going, what in the world? Where is this happening? What is geopolitically going on here? Who are these people? And I've actually had a blast. It's been so encouraging.
It's really fun.
Oh, it's been great. So I've been pleased to discover that I had an inkling of my heart for diving into God's word. And whether that's an encouragement to anybody else, I would encourage our students to set aside some time to do that. So not to, you know, to make sure that Bible reading or prayer time isn't just an academic exercise for an assignment, but is your heart in this?
For sure. You know, it's interesting you mentioned the drive time and how you save that and how beneficial that's been, because I found myself missing the drive time. and my drive's 25, 30 minutes there and then back, so an hour total.
Yeah.
And for me, I feel like that time has been so much of like a solitude. You know, it's my time for to have my thoughts to myself, to think, to reflect on things, to step back from my situations. And not having that for me has been like, I feel like there's been more of like just a flood of constant thought and thinking in my head that I haven't been able to kind of escape at times that I need to. It's also, you know, I listen to podcasts sometimes, and so it engages me intellectually. So it's funny how, you know, I feel like, depending, you know, who we talk to, it's like some people I think are really relieved to not have to make those drives. And then I found for myself, it's just like, I kind of miss it.
Yeah, you can't get away. You've got little kids too. So it, you can't get away from that. So that drive time is precious sometimes.
Ken, thanks so much for being with us today. It's really fun to hear your voice again.
And
just to reflect with you.
I do miss seeing you guys and miss being together and having conversations like this over coffee. So I poured my espresso, is it pronounced Grosch?
Oh yeah.
Little espresso mocha maker. And I poured a couple of cups of that today and got excited about discussing things with you guys. So thanks for inviting me to be a part of it.
Yeah. Really fun.
Yeah, in some ways, I feel like this is like it kind of creates an intentionality that's something that doesn't always exist on campus.
Right.
You know, you can kind of like bump into each other, but I've been grateful. I mean, I've even found that with connecting with some friends. It's like some friends I'll go 6 months without seeing, but, you know, we just had a gathering by Zoom the other night with, you know, three other couples, and it's kind of like, I'm not sure we would have done this, at all if it hadn't been for this. I mean, we certainly wouldn't have done it through Zoom. I don't think that would have even been on our radar. So it's kind of creating unique opportunities too in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah, really is. The devotional reading for yesterday, and I'll close maybe with this thought. The devotional reading for yesterday was from 1 Corinthians 16, where Paul says, there is a wide open door for great work here. And he was in the city of Ephesus. He wanted to get to Corinth to deal with ministry issues happening in Corinth, the city there. And so that was his job, he felt like, but he couldn't get there. So he actually found his current circumstance in Ephesus to be, however, an open door, a wide open door for great work. And I want to shift my mindset during this time that, okay, I would like to get to my regular work, but I can't. So how could I view this as a different sort of wide open door for great work? And maybe the Lord is opening up some ways for us to connect with people intentionally, or maybe the Lord is wanting to rework some of our habits and tendencies. There's probably a great work that God wants to do in our lives during this time. So I'm trying to view it that way. And I appreciate this time with you guys, because this is a great work to do this with you right now. Appreciate that.
Appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you, Ken.
So I think the question that you asked, Ken, about what does it look like to live our faith out when we're not in the normal patterns of it is a really, really good question.
It's such a sobering thing sometimes to think about, you know, if we were stripped out of our current circumstances and if we weren't a part of this church community or this college or anything like that, what it might look like, what it might mean for our Christian lives. In some ways, like I say, it's sobering, but I like what you had to say about it.
Mm-hmm. It feels like it's an opportunity for refinement too, right?
It was such an important point that he made. You know, he talked about maybe God has some work he wants to do, you know, in the patterns that we have in our life. And I think we can often just feel the painfulness of that, where maybe what it is like, it's a process of sanctification, right? Mm-hmm. Like to use shop talk terminology here, theological shop talk, but you know, it can be painful, but there's actually a positive process at work in it all, even though in our temporary circumstances, it might just feel like, you know, wow, the weakness or failure or incapability, when actually it could be this process of God, like revealing some stuff to us about the work he's doing in our life.
Right. Well, there's that, you know, your faith, which is more valuable than gold, is being refined as though by fire.
By fire.
I guess some of us feel that more than others, but it, you know, there is something really precious in the midst of all of this.
Yeah. And it's not that we shouldn't cherish, I think, you know, those patterns that get developed at a place like Crown, you know, in being just in an environment that encourages those kinds of things, but it is a good thing sometimes to be able to step outside of it. And I think we kind of do, you know, the schedule of our semesters are that we kind of do, you know, in the summertime and we do over Christmas break for sometimes long extended periods. So this is kind of a thing that I think kind of comes up in my life every time we have long breaks, you know, just kind of reflecting on this process. But when it's kind of imposed in this sense that we didn't expect it, and when it's going to be longer than any break we've ever had, you know, because we're essentially adding 2 months onto our summer in terms of being away from campus, it brings up things, I think, maybe that makes it happen sooner than we had expected.
And I think it really prompts that question of, well, who are you? Actually.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been something, you know, when I've dealt with a lot of fears, I think over the years with my PhD stuff. And a lot of times the fear is just not of just utter failure, but of utter failure, which will lead to then me not being able to teach.
Mm-hmm.
It's made me have to like face head on, like, okay, well, who are you if you don't teach? You know, I'm like, what does that really mean? Because I think it's not so much the fact that frightens me, it's the meaning I attribute to it.
Right.
It's how I interpret the meaning of it, you know, and just seeing folks that we've worked with who have moved on from Crown. And I know you and I have talked about this before, but it's been helpful to me because it's helped me see that, hey, look, like our primary identity can't by any means be dependent upon working this job or doing this role or even this kind of ministry.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I think, a guilty thing we get into a lot in ministry in general, is that people who are the ministers can so much associate our identity, you know, with the role. It can be a real negative thing.
I think there's a passage from Ephesians 2 that you mentioned sometimes, that is it Ephesians 2 that talks about, you know, we're seated with Christ in the heavenly places. And
Ephesians 1 and
Ephesians 1.
Yep. There's a couple places throughout Ephesians where it occurs. Yep.
But this realization that there is an identity that we have in Christ that's much more secure and permanent and has already begun, and to have that be the primary thing and then let everything else be secondary.
Yeah, and it's not like it says, oh, and ministers of the gospel in official, you know, ministry roles who are teachers and pastors are the ones seated in the heavenly realms of Christ. Uh-huh. It's all believers, and we've been blessed in the heavenly realms with every spiritual blessing in Christ. You know, and that's a pretty universal message for you know, for the Ephesian communities or for the communities in Asia Minor, but also for Christians in general. So I think it's a good reminder.
Thank you for being with us today. Hope we can have coffee together again next week.